Well, the poet T.S. Eliot, he was born in 1888 in the United States, St. Louis, I believe, died in 1965 in London, and he lived during the heyday of the Industrial Revolution, way before the information revolution and technology explosion that we've seen in the last 20 years or so. Eliot came of age and began his writing during a period of history that could be described, I think, by a line in the book of Daniel: many will rush here and there, and knowledge will increase. The poem, Choruses from the Rock, is rather long, and it's replete with biblical references. I think the rock, we know who that is, who he's referring to. But here's a brief excerpt that shows where knowledge and information without wisdom can take us. The endless cycle of idea and action, endless invention, endless experiment, brings knowledge of motion, but not of stillness, knowledge of speech, but not of silence, knowledge of words and ignorance of the word. All our knowledge brings us nearer to our ignorance. All our ignorance brings us nearer to death. But nearness to death, no nearer to God. Where is the wisdom we have lost in knowledge? Where is the knowledge we have lost in information? The cycles of heaven in 20 centuries bring us farther from God and nearer to the dust. Isaac Asimov, one of the great science fiction writers of the 20th century, put it this way. He said, "The saddest aspect of life right now is that science gathers knowledge faster than society gathers wisdom. Today's world is far from wisdom. It's full of distractions. Seldom does anyone ever stop to think about the consequences of his or her actions." You can see that in this whole debate that's going on today with abortion. The myriad problems that plague the modern world today would be avoided, completely avoided, if true wisdom were rightly understood. Now, here's a quote from the newspaper columnist Doug Larson that applies on the individual level, having to do with wisdom. He says, "Wisdom is the quality that keeps you from getting into situations where you need it." That's an interesting view of wisdom. Wisdom is the quality that keeps you from getting into situations where you need it. Well, I don't know about you, but I sometimes find myself saying this: it seemed like a good idea at the time. You know, referring to something that I have done earlier, maybe earlier in the day, earlier in the week, whenever. Well, that kind of indicates to me that I could really use a lot more wisdom at work in my life. I need it. I know I need it. Now, we wouldn't be here today, though, if God hadn't given us the wisdom and the understanding to obediently keep the Sabbath holy. That's why we're here. We come seeking to be instructed from God's word. We're meeting together in fellowship so we can encourage one another in the faith. We know that we must be continually growing in wisdom. We know that. But are we? Are we really? Are we becoming stagnant? Today, in a message titled, "Who is Wise and Understanding?", we'll see what God requires of us if we are to gain more wisdom. But if we're not careful, we can be like the CEO. The CEO was visited by an angel. An angel came down right in the middle of a board meeting and spoke to the CEO. The angel said, "Because of your pious life, I'm going to give you a choice between unbounded wisdom, wealth, or beauty." Of course, being a pious man, He chose wisdom without hesitation. Very well, the angel said, and disappeared in a cloud of smoke. The CEO sat there in silence with kind of a glow about him, as the story goes. Anyway, just a story, of course. And all the other board members are staring at him, just staring at him. Finally, someone spoke up and said, "Say something to us. We want to hear the voice of wisdom." The CEO replied, "I should have taken the money." That's probably not the kind of wisdom we're going to be talking about today. Well, in 1 Kings chapter 3, you can go ahead and turn there if you want to. We'll be spending a little bit of time there. In 1 Kings chapter 3, we have the account of God actually himself, God appearing to King Solomon in a dream and giving him the opportunity to ask for anything he wanted. Because of his humility and lack of life experience, he was only about 20 years old at the time, we think, Solomon made the right choice. He chose wisdom. He acknowledged his weaknesses and his total dependence on God. So here we are in 1 Kings chapter 3, and we'll be reading from verse 6 down to verse 13. Hebrews chapter 3, starting in verse 6. And Solomon said, "You have shown great mercy to your servant David, my father, because he walked before you in truth, in righteousness, and in uprightness of heart with you. You have continued this great kindness for him, and you have given him a son to sit on his throne, as it is this day. Now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king instead of my father David. But I am a little child, and I do not know how to go out or how to come in. And your servant is in the midst of your people, whom you have chosen, a great people, too numerous to be counted, to be numbered or counted. Therefore, give to your servant an understanding heart to judge your people, that I may discern between good and evil. For who was able to judge this great people of yours?" The speech pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this thing. Then God said to him, "Because you asked this thing, you have asked this thing and have not asked for long life for yourself, nor have asked riches for yourself, nor have asked the life of your enemies, but have asked for yourself understanding to discern justice, behold, I have done according to your words. See, I have given you a wise and understanding heart, so that there has not been anyone like you before you, nor shall any like you arise after you. And I have also given you what you have not asked, both riches and honor, so that there shall not be anyone like you among the kings all your days." Now, we'll be turning to the next chapter, 1 Kings chapter 4, and we'll continue, and we'll see the result of this wisdom, a result for Solomon personally and for the kingdom of Israel. So 1 Kings chapter 4, verse 29. "And God gave Solomon wisdom and exceedingly great understanding and largeness of heart like the sand on the seashore. Thus Solomon's wisdom excelled the wisdom of all the men of the east and all the wisdom of Egypt. For he was wiser than all men, than Ethan the Ezrahite, and Heman Chalcol, and Darda, the sons of Mahol, and his fame was in all the surrounding nations. He spoke 3,000 proverbs, and his songs were 1,005. Also he spoke of trees, from the cedar tree of Lebanon, even to the hyssop that springs out of the wall. He spoke also of animals, of birds, of creeping things, and of fish. Actually, his knowledge, Solomon's knowledge, was encyclopedic, really. He was what a later age would call a Renaissance man. Kind of like makes you think of Leonardo da Vinci or someone like that. Even greater than that, of course. Unlike the knowledge that we read in that T.S. Eliot poem that takes us farther and farther from real wisdom, this knowledge was skillfully applied by Solomon to real life situations. Verse 34, and men of all nations from all the kings of the earth who had heard of his wisdom came to hear the wisdom of Solomon. Apparently he put on seminars for kings of other nations to teach them this wisdom that came from God. Just consider for a moment what this gift of wisdom meant for Solomon, for his nation, and really for the entire world, the entire known world of that day. Solomon's leadership in his early days demonstrates the wisdom of humble reliance on God for understanding and guidance. During this period, the magnificent, beautiful temple was built, as well as a vast array of other building projects, aqueducts and every kind of thing. The United Kingdom of Israel was at peace during this period and expanded to its greatest extent, with riches just pouring into the country. The Queen of Sheba came to test him with difficult questions and found that his wisdom exceeded everything that she had heard about it. No one had ever seen this level of wisdom in one individual before. His leadership was imbued with solid judgment, good decisions, insightful planning, and purposeful direction of his life as well as the life of his nation. What a huge blessing this was to those fortunate enough to live in Israel at that time. Just imagine what that must have been like. This is probably the one period of time when Israel actually got the closest to being what God wanted Israel to be, a light to the rest of the world. And the notoriety of the accomplishments resulting from his God-given wisdom spread far and wide. Kings and leaders from all nations wanted to come just to hear him talk. This kind of wisdom is power. Absolute power. It had a huge impact on Solomon's life, and it can positively impact our lives, your life and my life today. That is, if we approach it like he did at the beginning, with reverence for God and genuine humility. The Wikipedia definition of wisdom goes like this, quote, the ability to think and act using knowledge, experience, understanding, common sense, and insight. We just read that Solomon spoke 3,000 proverbs. Now, most, if not all, of these proverbs were probably written down. Some may have been lost. Many of them went into the book we're going to be looking at here in a minute, the book of Proverbs, of course, Ecclesiastes. And some were even left and were still around in Hezekiah's day. And it's thought that some of the last part of Proverbs comes from that. But he wrote most of these 3,000 Proverbs down, we think. All right. Here's an example of a proverb. You know what a proverb is. I mean, just a proverb in general is a pithy saying that explains something about how to live life, how to live it well, right? Now, here's an example of a proverb that you've probably heard before. It's not found anywhere in the Bible, and it goes like this, a secular proverb, then we would say, God helps those who help themselves. That kind of rings true. There's truth to that, okay? It's not found in the Bible, like I say, but it's still generally pretty good advice for us to realize we can't expect God to do for us what we ought to be doing for ourselves, right? God helps those who help themselves. But when we get into the book of Proverbs, which we're going to do a little bit today, I want to just kind of whet your appetite for reading the book of Proverbs. When we get into this, we'll see that what we have here is very practical, but it's a whole lot more than just practical, good advice, which it is, but it's even more than that. Proverbs, the book of Proverbs, is so jam-packed with practical wisdom that it really is worthy of our personal, intense study on our own. And I'm hoping you'll want to do that when you get a chance. You can take a really good commentary. There are many commentaries that go along with Proverbs and help explain it. And of course, God's Spirit in your mind is gonna do a lot of it, right? Okay. So this afternoon, we're only going to cover some highlights. Now let's turn to the book of Proverbs. Then, good place to start. Let me see. Might be chapter 1, verse 1. Proverbs, chapter 1, and verse 1. The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel. To know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity. Now that sounds a little bit like our Wikipedia definition of wisdom that we read earlier. Wisdom is referred to directly 47 times in the book of Proverbs. That's just when it's directly mentioned. All right. But the entire book, and if you think about it really, the entire Bible actually covers. Wisdom is a huge, huge subject. It has to do, and I should tell you this, I listened to about four or five different sermons on the topic of wisdom from various ministers in our church, and it's interesting, they all went in different directions with wisdom. It is a huge subject. So we're just going to narrow it down to certain things that we need to keep in mind when we're looking for and trying to have more wisdom in our lives. Let's drop down to verse 20 now. And notice how Solomon describes wisdom, what it is. Solomon personifies wisdom as a woman shouting in the streets and encourages his son to embrace her. Verse 20, wisdom calls aloud outside. She raises her voice in the open squares. She cries out in the chief concourses, at the openings of the gates in the city. She speaks her words. Now, if you'll hold your place there in Proverbs chapter 1, let's turn to James chapter 1. James chapter 1, and we'll start reading in verse 5. On the subject, of course, of wisdom. That's James 1, verse 5. Now, in these, we're going to read four verses here. James is telling us what kind of a person. We just heard wisdom's call. Wisdom is crying out. Listen to me, she says. Okay, what kind of person then will answer wisdom's call? Verse 5. If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all liberally and without reproach, and it will be given to him. But let him ask in faith, with no doubting, for he who doubts is like a wave of the sea, driven and tossed by the wind. For let not that man suppose that he will receive anything from the Lord. He is a double-minded man, unstable in all his ways. So if we want wisdom, we first must believe that God is there, that he's in the third heaven, that he hears our prayers, and he's ready to give it to us. It takes faith, and God is ready to give that to us too. We can't have our loyalty, this is what James is saying, we can't have our loyalty divided between God and the world. Pick one or the other. Let's pick God. Turn back to Proverbs now, back to Proverbs chapter 1, where we were, and we'll ponder a key verse. This is key to all of this. Proverbs 1 and verse 7. Proverbs 1, verse 7. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. This means we recognize our total, complete dependence on God for everything in our lives, including, really, especially for knowledge and for wisdom. It's bound up in our relationship with God. We enter into His presence every day in deep reverence and respect for His awesome power. We're humbled by the realization, just think about it, that He has opened up our minds to the understanding of His Word. Now, let's look at the second half of that verse. But fools despise wisdom and instruction. I was kind of surprised. The word fool, and that's either in singular or plural form, fool or fools, appears a total of 63 times in the book of Proverbs. Solomon is contrasting, that's a really a great method of teaching, is to contrast one thing with another so that you clearly see what it is. Wisdom clearly stands out in stark contrast to foolishness. As you read this book, you begin to realize, boy, we all fall short of this level, this kind of wisdom. And I sure hope you don't think, I know you don't, you don't think I can stand up here this afternoon and say, boy, everything I've done has always been really wise. Yeah. I think you know better. I've really acted the fool at different times. But here's another interesting quote. The economist Theodore Levitt said, experience comes from what we have done. You know, I said, seemed like a good idea at the time, right? Whatever it was. Okay, wisdom comes from what we have done. Experience comes from what we have done. Wisdom comes from what we have done badly. So if I don't learn from what I've done foolishly, where I've sort of played the fool, right? Okay, then I've missed an opportunity, a real opportunity to gain some wisdom. And that'd be a shame. I can only learn from what I have done badly by keeping this deep reverence, this fear of God. That's important. Speaking of which, let's turn to Proverbs chapter 9. We'll read verses 10 and 11. Proverbs 9 and verse 10. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. For by me your days will be multiplied, and years of life will be added to you. That interests me. Years of life added to you. Those of us who've been blessed to understand, some of us in this room, we're still fairly young. I believe I was about in my 20s. That's a lot younger than I am now. When I first began to understand the principles in this book of Proverbs, right? And it's really, it is a blessing for anyone to understand and apply these principles in your life. Wow, it's great. And now for many of us in this room, I'm not looking at anyone in particular. But for many of us in this room, we realize how little time we have left on this earth. We don't have a lot of time. I mean, I'm 74, so, do I have 30 years and live to be 104? Probably not. Anyway, we just have a certain amount of time left to us, and if we'll submit to this source of all wisdom, receiving the instruction that he has for us, we are promised that years will be added to our lives. Well, maybe I will live to be 104 then. Maybe. I don't know. Be nice. But we know what really matters. It's just that the lives lived with wisdom, right, are going to be good years, productive years. In chapter 2, here in the book of Proverbs, in chapter 2, Solomon is urging his son to seek wisdom, crying out for insight and understanding. That's the only way to know how to act and speak in every situation in life. It goes way beyond simple intelligence. It isn't just understanding wisdom. We need to understand it, of course, but it's internalizing that wisdom, taking it into our innermost being. So we'll be turning to Proverbs chapter 2 and starting in verse 6. This provides the ability to avoid problems as well as the skill to handle those problems when they arise. All right, so Proverbs chapter 2 and verse 6. For the Lord gives wisdom. From his mouth come knowledge and understanding. He stores up sound wisdom for the upright. He is a shield to those who walk uprightly. Our fear of God, our reverence for him, prompts us to obey his laws. That's what living uprightly means, right? To live godly lives. Verse 8, he guards the paths of justice and preserves the way of his saints. Then you will understand righteousness and justice, equity in every good path. When wisdom enters your heart and knowledge is pleasant to your soul, discretion will preserve you, understanding will keep you. Now we're going to go back to the book of James. I guess I could have said, hold your place in James. We'll go back to the book of James, and we'll be looking at James chapter 3. There's a lot here in this chapter that relates to everything we read in the book of Proverbs, and really throughout the Bible, that has to do with wisdom, right? Here, the Apostle James is contrasting two diametrically opposed types of wisdom, each one bearing its own particular sort of fruit. And boy, the contrast between these two types of wisdom couldn't be more stark. James chapter 3, starting in verse 13. Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show by good conduct that his works are done in the meekness of wisdom. Now, we've already seen that true wisdom has to be internalized, and if it is, it's going to result in acts of service toward others. Verse 14, but if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, do not boast and lie against the truth. This wisdom does not descend from above, but is earthly, sensual, demonic. Worldly wisdom is nothing more than selfish human ambition. That's all it is. Paul explained in 1 Corinthians 1 how God's plan of salvation makes the wisdom of this world look foolish. Human wisdom really is foolishness because it takes a person away from the source of all wisdom, and that's God. As we heard in the sermonette, Adam and Eve, they started the whole thing. Thank you very much. Verse 16, for where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and every evil thing are there. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. the backdrop of James's discussion here that we're reading of wisdom is that there were some brethren in these congregations he was addressing in his book, in his epistle. There were some brethren in these congregations who really had a strong interest in becoming teachers. Now, they could have been motivated by a sincere desire to share God's word with his people, but more often than not, it seems anyway, this ambition was merely a way to elevate their social status within the early church, make themselves look better to start with. We know from Paul's words to Timothy, when he wrote to Timothy in the second epistle to Timothy, we know there's nothing wrong with teaching in the church. We need it. We have to have it, right? Matter of fact, Paul gave Timothy instruction on exactly how it should be done. He said, patiently correct, rebuke, and encourage your people with good teaching. I didn't give you the exact reference on that one. You can look it up on your own if you want to. Now, let's go back to verse 1 of this chapter that we're in here in James chapter 3. James chapter 3 and verse 1. This will give us the background. My brethren, let not many of you become teachers, knowing that we shall receive a stricter judgment. James is letting everyone who might aspire to be a teacher in the church know that they're going to be held to a higher standard of accountability. For we all stumble in many ways. If anyone does not stumble in word, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle the whole body. James is concerned not only with those who would be teachers, but all the members in these congregations that he is writing to. We all have to carefully choose our words, since our speech influences the relationships that we have with others. James is telling us that we can all do a better job. We've all said things. Every one of us has said things that have hurt other people. In the next few verses, he points out the tongue's astonishing capacity. When you get a chance, read this again. I know you've read it before. But the tongue's astonishing capacity for evil, he compares it to a tiny spark that sets off a huge forest fire. But his reason for writing this wasn't just because there was backbiting and gossiping going on, and there was, sure. James was discussing the wrong use of speech because some were promoting themselves as teachers in the church, right? And what they were trying to do was lord it over the brethren, gain some control and power over brethren in the church. And this, of course, was causing strife and contention in these congregations. So, returning to verse 13 now, let's go back to verse 13, which we read before. Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show by good conduct that his works are done in the meekness of wisdom. These people who wanted to be looked up to as teachers in the church weren't acting in the spirit of the meekness of wisdom, not at all. And their wisdom wasn't really, truly wisdom anyway. There was jealousy and selfish ambition in their hearts. And that is not the wisdom that comes from God. Here's the way verses 17 and 18 are put in the New Living Translation. But the wisdom from above is first of all pure. It is also peace-loving, gentle at all times, and willing to yield to others. It is full of mercy and the fruit of good deeds. It shows no favoritism and is always sincere. And those who are peacemakers will plant seeds of peace and reap a harvest of righteousness. May God grant us all that kind of wisdom that James is talking about there. We know that God resists the proud. James said this somewhere else in his epistle. God resists the proud and gives grace to the humble. What was the attitude then of young King Solomon that impressed God so much? Well, it was his spirit of humility that led him to acknowledge his human weaknesses before God. James said, if you need wisdom, and we all need wisdom, then ask God, who is generous, and he will give it to you. We can count on that. Well, since we can only approach him then with a humble spirit, in Proverbs chapter 11, we'll see, we'll be turning there, Proverbs 11, we'll see that humility and uprightness, righteous living, work hand in hand to provide wisdom. Proverbs chapter 11 and verses 2 and 3. When pride comes, then comes shame. But with the humble is wisdom. The integrity of the upright will guide them, but the perversity of the unfaithful will destroy them. We can see this also, if you'll flip forward in Proverbs, a few chapters, chapter 15, Proverbs 15, verse 33, we see the same thing here. The fear of the Lord is the instruction of wisdom, and before honor is humility. We've already noted that a deep reverence, fear of the Lord, is a requirement for wisdom. Here we see that it fosters, it's a requirement for wisdom, but it also fosters an attitude of humility. Because having the proper regard, this fear of God in our lives, counteracts the natural human tendency we all have to delude ourselves. We can easily delude ourselves into believing, oh, we're okay. I'm okay. I'm okay. You're okay. Somebody wrote a book about that about 40 years ago. We don't want to believe that we are self-sufficient. All right, another requirement for gaining wisdom is to have a teachable spirit. The next verse we'll look at is in Proverbs chapter 9. And now this, in Proverbs chapter 9, this verse comes right before one that we already read, having to do with wisdom. Wisdom begins with the fear of the Lord. Here's what it says. Proverbs 9 and verse 9. Give instruction to a wise man, and he will be still wiser. Teach a just man, and he will increase in learning. I don't know how many in here can recall a time, I can, a time in our former association when we had a lot of people, well, I was one of them, a lot of people who thought they knew everything they needed to know, all right? Talk about know-it-alls, right? They thought they knew it all. Well, after all, you know, we had something that other people don't have, and that's God's truth. But, you know, it's a dangerous approach. It's good to be thankful and grateful for having God's truth, but we had not to feel like we're better than other people. That's a very dangerous approach to take. William Shakespeare said, "The fool doth think he is wise, but the wise man knows himself to be a fool." If we think we know it all, that God has given us all his truth, everything, we have all his truth, this is it, we don't need any more, then we don't have a teachable spirit. We're in danger then of becoming fools. Wouldn't that be a shame to have God's truth and become a fool? That's crazy. Now, back again in chapter 15, we were there before. Chapter 15, we'll see this willingness to be taught described in verses 31 and 32. Proverbs 15, I'm going to read these two verses, 31 and 32, in the New Living Translation. I just like the way it's put. If you listen to constructive criticism, you will be at home among the wise. If you reject discipline, you only harm yourself. But if you listen to correction, you grow in understanding. Now, so far, God has shown us through Solomon's words that there's nothing more important for you and for me, right? Nothing more important to us as Christians than gaining wisdom. It affects our personal well-being, but way beyond that, more importantly, it positively affects all the relationships we have with others, with our mates, with our family, with everyone in our lives. We should always truly be thankful that God has taught us his way. He's put us on the pathway to his eternal kingdom. But we must realize that we are far from attaining all the wisdom. We have not attained all the wisdom God wants to give us. It's a continual process. It's an ongoing thing, right? If we realize how desperately we need God's counsel in our lives, we also know it's not going to come without some effort. And I don't know about you, but I'm kind of lazy. I need to expend some effort in the pursuit of real wisdom. If we are truly seeking godly wisdom, we need diligence and perseverance to attain it. We've got to keep at it. 100 years ago, you know, kids were taught differently 100 years ago in school. They could actually pray in school. They could even read Bibles. Here's a little verse that children had to memorize 100 years ago, written in their McGuffey's Reader. You've heard of McGuffey's Reader from way back when. Goes like this: the fisher who draws in his net too soon won't have any fish to sell. The child who shuts up his book too soon won't learn any lessons well. If you would have your learning stay, be patient. Don't learn too fast. The man who travels a mile each day may get round the world at last. A little bit each day, keeping at it. If you'll turn with me now to Proverbs chapter 8, we'll listen again to wisdom speaking to us. Proverbs chapter 8. We'll be reading verses 12 down to 17. Okay, Proverbs 8, verse 12. I, wisdom, dwell with prudence, and find out knowledge and discretion. The fear of the Lord is to hate evil, pride and arrogance, and every evil way. And the perverse mouth I hate. Counsel is mine, and sound wisdom. I am understanding. I have strength. By me kings reign, and rulers decree justice. By me princes rule, and nobles, all the judges of the earth. I love those who love me, and those who seek me diligently. That I'm emphasizing that word for myself. And those who seek me diligently will find me. Solomon spoke of a diligent approach to seeking wisdom back, and we were in chapter 2 before, Proverbs chapter 2. We can turn there again. Proverbs chapter 2 and verse 1, speaking of diligence in regards to gaining more wisdom. Proverbs 2 and verse 1. My son, if you receive my words and treasure my commands within you, so that you incline your ear to wisdom and apply your heart to understanding, yes, if you cry out for discernment and lift up your voice for understanding, if you seek her as silver and search for her as for hidden treasures, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. These next verses, now we read them earlier. We were emphasizing the need to live righteous lives. Now let's take a look at them. from the standpoint of diligence. Verse 6, I'm going to be reading this in the New Living Translation. And that's Proverbs chapter 2, verse 6. For the Lord grants wisdom. From his mouth come knowledge and understanding. He grants a treasure of common sense to the honest. He is a shield to those who walk in integrity. He guards the paths of the just and protects those who are faithful to him. Then you will understand what is right, just, and fair, and you will find the right way to go. For wisdom will enter your heart, and knowledge will fill you with joy. Wise choices will watch over you. Understanding will keep you safe. In a recent Beyond Today Daily, Darris McNeely reported that, this may surprise you, it surprised me. You know what the largest religious group in America is today? Anybody want to guess? Yes, exactly. Atheists. Isn't that amazing? Yeah, it's not Catholicism. It's not any Protestant denomination. I mean, this is really, this shows how far gone we are. It's atheism. Over 23% of those polled in a recent survey were self-identified atheists. I remember when I lived in National City, we way down the street, about three blocks down, there was this house, and we would walk by it. That's an atheist lives in there. Atheist. Now, he didn't try to convert us to atheism, you know. He was a little outnumbered back in the 1950s. But today, it's a different deal. It's a whole different thing. Darris McNeely pointed out that a society that doesn't worship God is naturally going to have increased mental disorders, drug addiction, and it's going to find itself given over to, and we see this whole thing with this abortion business, given over to licentious worship of sex. We can't afford to let the rejection of wisdom by today's society affect us. And it's out there. It's everywhere around us. It's the world we live in. And it's, you know, it's going to take some effort to keep it from affecting us. It takes determination to cultivate godly wisdom in our daily lives so that this world is not rubbing off on us. And everything that happens in our lives really gives us a God-given opportunity to gain some more wisdom. The question we've been answering in this message this afternoon is, who is wise and understanding? We've seen that the truly wise and understanding person fears God, approaches him with deep reverence, humbly seeks wisdom from him, and believes that God is ready to grant it to him. We have to be praying every day in faith for it. We have to be willing to see our shortcomings. That's the hard part. See our shortcomings and let God correct us. Nobody likes correction, but we need it. And as we just saw, we've got to work at it with a diligent spirit. We have to dig for it in God's Word. Now, it's found throughout the Bible, as I said. The three books of wisdom literature of the Old Testament are Proverbs, which we were in Proverbs a little bit this afternoon, but also Job and Ecclesiastes. And then in the New Testament, all that Christ taught, just think of it, everything that he taught, his entire life recorded for us in the Gospels, is pure, unadulterated wisdom. Think of the Sermon on the Mount. And you know what he said about living, really living God's law in your personal life. Everything that Paul and John, Peter and James and Jude, the whole book of Jude is about wisdom, really. All of the New Testament all imparts wisdom from above. So let's conclude with a scripture many of us have committed to memory. I don't know. I think Jeannie and I would say this is our favorite. We just kind of try to, it isn't always easy, but it's fun to try to live these two verses. Proverbs chapter 3 and verse 5. Proverbs 3 verses 5 and 6 summarize the practical, I'm going to say, where the rubber meets the road aspect of seeking wisdom. Proverbs 3 verse 5. Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct your paths. Verse 7 is good too. You might want to read that.